In Mary Gordon's latest novel called Pearl, an American student goes off to Ireland and gets caught up with the IRA, especially with the romance of dying for a noble cause.
Heroes were called martyrs. Her spine thrilled when she heard the word. She'd discovered it secretly on her own, as other children might discover the term sadist or coprophilia. She had never heard the word martyr spoken aloud. But her mother had heard the word and spoken it. It was a word her mother was born knowing. So would you say that it was part of Pearl's background, even if it was silenced, rendered invisible? Maria Myers was raised Catholic, but she was determined that her child would not be.
Mary Gordon's story comes out of her own background. She grew up Catholic, revering the martyrs of church history. Over the years, she's often been called a Catholic writer. She used to bristle at the label. Why couldn't she just be called a writer? But more recently, she's made her peace with the label. She's come to realize that her image bank is distinctly Catholic. Mary Gordon recently stopped by our studio, where Steve Paulson asked about her faith and her fascination with martyrs.
Did martyrdom figure prominently in your own imagination as a child?
Absolutely. We were told to pray for martyrdom. So one of the things that I prayed for, and a very potent fantasy for me, and this was, you know, Cold War America of the 50s. So the enemy were Russian communists who were atheists and hated the church. So I had a very strong repetitive fantasy that a Russian soldier in a brown coat and a helmet would put a rifle to my head and say there is no God. And I would say, no, I won't. And then I would be shot. And then I would go right to heaven. And I was supposed to pray for that.
How old were you then?
Oh, you know, 5, 6, 7.
Wow. That's pretty heavy for a child of that age.
Well, it was serious stuff. You have to remember that it was a climate of fear and also a climate of triumphalism. So the way that you dealt with your terror that you were going to be annihilated was to imagine a later triumph. It's why I very well understand suicide bombers. A literal belief, and you have to understand that it was a literal belief, not a metaphoric one, that if you did this, it was quite a good bargain because you would have a few moments of horror and agony and then eternal bliss. And you would pass go. You wouldn't have to go to purgatory for all the bad, nasty things you did. It was just a free ticket.
Now, in your novel, Pearl, the mother, Maria, tries to hide this culture of martyrdom from her daughter.
Yes.
What is she afraid of?
What she's afraid of is the blight that cast on a life, that if you believe that death is the most desirable thing, what does that do to life? And she didn't want her daughter's life to be drained of hope and joy, and particularly joy in the quotidian, in the daily, in the here and now. So that if one's eye was always fixed on eternal bliss, where was the present?
Is that a real danger, especially for Catholics growing up, that they're so obsessed with death that they can't really experience life to the fullest?
I think that culture of Catholicism is pretty much over, except probably in some very right-wing Opus Dei kind of circles. I think that one of the things that the Second Vatican Council did, which was a very great thing, was to sort of shift the emphasis from death to life. What is lost, if that is lost, and it's, I think, on the whole, a very good thing that it's lost, is a sort of grandness of terms. That if you really believe everything is life or death, every day is meaningful and serious. And there's no slack, there's no flabbiness in your life. Everything is sort of brilliant and resonant.
Well, and there's also a glorious tradition in Catholic history about
yes.
this, especially when you read the lives of the saints.
And yes.
I'm not Catholic myself, but still I find the saints fascinating.
Yes.
And, I mean, especially those female saints
yes.
who seem to revel in the prospect of death and, I suppose, in some ways, perhaps martyrdom as well.
Well, just to try to take something positive from the jaws of death almost, one of the reasons that martyrs were important as an image to young girls was that they entered the public sphere. They made public statements by their lives and their beliefs. And if In the 50s, we were told what you should do is stay home and cook and be the power behind some great man. That was a real alternative because a martyr wasn't speaking for anybody but herself and God, which is a little bit better, I think, than just shutting up or saying what's going to please a man.
But what a way to make a statement. You got to die to be recognized publicly.
Yes. Nevertheless, you might need something like that to blast the hold of the domestic, which has been so diminishing, I think, for a lot of women.
So were the lives of the saints, were they particularly fascinating to you?
Oh, my God, absolutely. I mean, it was, we were kind of like movie stars, you know, and you read them over and over again, and you got the details, and they were so exciting and grand. And then always there was a sense, and I realized it was a real turning point for me psychologically when I realized at about 10 that I really didn't want to be a martyr. That there was a point, the Lent that I was 12, I thought that I should do penance by putting thorns in my shoes and walking around saying prayers with thorns in my shoes. And after I did that for a couple of days, I tried to figure out ways that I could walk so that the thorns wouldn't actually hurt me.
Which kind of defeats the purpose.
Which really defeated the purpose. And I realized that I was a slacker and a failure. And I had to give that up. And so at some point, the body and its pleasures took over in my life, and I gave up the idea of martyrdom.
When you look back on your childhood, what were your earliest images of God?
There was God, who was God the Father, who was august, but sort of a hyped up version of my father. You know, what my father could do for me if he happened to be omnipotent, which he unfortunately didn't. And then there was Jesus, who seemed much more accessible, much more somebody I could go to. And the image of the cross, of the crucifix, we had crucifixes all over our house. So there was that image of love unto death and suffering, which was also very deeply embedded in my consciousness. So there was a funny combination of domesticity and horror that melded into my image of God.
What about the Virgin Mary?
Well, I didn't like the Virgin Mary very much because she was well-behaved and silent. The silence of the Virgin Mary and her obedience were stressed, and I didn't want to go there. I knew that my place in the world was with words. And oddly enough, my family had a real contempt for ordinary domesticity. They really thought that only quite inferior people cared about houses and food and clothing, and that really superior people just tried to get through that as quickly as possible to think about the four last things. And I knew from a very, very early age that I didn't want to be a conventional woman. And because Mary seemed so conventional and so obedient and non-troublemaking and quiet, it took me a really long time to get back to her.
Boy, but you're dealing with two very contradictory images here. On the one hand, you didn't want to be conventional, and yet there was certainly a powerful strain of Catholicism that you were exposed to that was teaching girls to be conventional.
Yeah, but then we had these saints who were not conventional. So, for example, I slept with a statue of Joan of Arc in a way that some children would sleep with dolls. So there were these women who took their place in the larger world, like the martyrs, like Joan of Arc, like Teresa of Avila. And I liked these kind of ferocious women saints. And so they provided a model that I could really feel more comfortable with and excited by.
You had the statue in your bed?
Yes.
It doesn't sound very comfortable.
Well, it wasn't about being comfortable. It was about getting to the truth of things.
As you look back on that, I mean, do you think that made you stronger?
I think that it was so wacky that I'm very grateful for it as a writer. I think that what I'm grateful for is, as I said, the terms were always large. And it was kind of the opposite of mall culture. It was nutty, but it was grand. And I think to have those grand terms in one's vocabulary is not a bad thing for a writer.
Did you go through a period of disillusionment with the Catholic Church?
Oh, God, yes. About 15, 20 years. Huh. And the tragedy of the Catholic Church, the contemporary Catholic Church, is its obsession with sex. And so I felt, you know, coming of age in the 60s, I wanted to be a sexual person. And I felt I couldn't be a sexual person and be a Catholic. And also, I just thought what they were saying about sex was stupid, if not insane. And my rage at that made me really leave the church for until I was in my 30s, from my teenage years to being in my 30s. And it upsets me a lot about Catholicism, because if you look at Catholic moral teaching over the centuries, sex doesn't play the dominant role. It's much more about justice. It's much more about charity than about sexuality. And for some reason, the church has just got stuck on this dime of sexual repression, and it's blotted out a lot of its moral greatness.
But what I find so interesting about your own story is that so many intellectuals who grew up in the Catholic Church abandoned it. I mean, they couldn't deal with those kinds of things that you're talking about, and they just chucked it. And in fact, in some cases, have turned very anti-Catholic, and you haven't done that.
Well, I completely understand anti-Catholicism. I think everything that you can say against the Catholic Church is absolutely earned, particularly by the hierarchy. I guess what is dear to me is the ritual, the sacramental life, a kind of community. It's important to me to be in a room on a regular basis with people who aren't like me. That is, people who don't read the books that I read, may not even vote the way I vote, don't treasure the cultural things that I treasure. But we all sit together in a room, and for 1 hour a week, we wish for the same things in the world. And I have no access to that outside Catholicism.
Even though that in itself is not necessarily religious, or is it?
I think it is, that we're not, you know, pledging allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. We're really talking about the Lamb of God and asking God for mercy and thanking God. And so this unity of purpose around something greater than any of our individual lives, I think that is religious. I think religion, when it's not being horrible, which it often is, allows for an amplitude of expression and imagination. It can hit more of the human tones than anything else can, I think.
Mary Gordon spoke with Steve Paulson. Her latest novel is called Pearl, and a collection of her short stories has just been published.